keep your hands to yourself.
All in good morning. And I said, blues, how do you do?
Baby, it's all right now. Sunshine's falling down. Girl.
Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a Southern Storm of bold, liberating rock. Shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast on Pantheon Podcast, where you can go and find the music podcast of your choice to your liking. We always hope that we're on that list, but if we're not, you're going to go and find any kind of style of music podcast that you just love and enjoy. So please go to Pantheon Podcast to check out whatever you want. Check out us. Check out the Hook Rocks with our buddy Jay Scott. And with all the time that I'm here, Jason is too. So what's going on, man?
I am here. And I want to talk about our buddy Jay for a second. Sure. I feel like we've influenced him, Brian, because he's now had on Parker Barrow. So Southern Rock, he's starting to do more of that. He's got a new interview out with Els Bailey, who we've been trying to link right up on with, but she's in England, so it's hard. So he's doing some blues and Southern Rock, and I feel like we've influenced him. So you're welcome, Jay.
Yeah, we compliment each other well, you know, I think.
And we do.
sometimes we've had people that he's talked to first and vice versa. So glad to have you, Jay, as a friend. And anytime we get to chat, it's always great and hilarious and unpredictable and, you know, whatever other kind of description you want to throw on there. So,
and I've got to carry on. This isn't the all marketing for Jay. I don't want to get into, but he just had a episode on Stoner Rock. Like, what Stoner Rock?
Yeah.
What are some of the bands?
Yeah.
And like Clutch, I guess they consider Stoner Rock, and it never really made sense to me what they meant by Stoner Rock. But now I sort of get it when you say Clutch or, you know, some of these other bands. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. And coincidentally, in my kind of like in playing bass and my quest to like kind of, I think music's always in a place we're trying to get our music to a certain, you know, what is it that we want to play and do, what's best fitting for us. And so from time to time, and I've recently gone back to what they called garage rock in the 60s, which a lot of it is, you know, it's got that kind of psychedelic organ, but you know, there's some bands where you can find it like for some reason they were, you know, foreshadowing grunge. So it's kind of, and in that, I guess what we're going to call stoner rock and or that kind of stuff. And some of that stuff I like, some of it kind of is a little poppy, but it's so funny because back then, like all those bands, they dress like in like suits and whatever, but the drummers are all just fantastic, you know? So I've been listening to that and that I think kind of, and I think I did comment that on Jay's post about that. I mean, listen to garage rock.
You did. So like what are some of these bands that are grabbing your attention that you're liking right now from that?
Well, and I should be able to answer this right off the top of my head, but you know, I definitely have to quote, look in the magic eight ball that is Spotify and look at my list here. It's so funny because it's always every band is like the like adjective noun. Yeah. I mean, it's like the Weeds, the Smoke, the Wailers, the Lost Souls, out of our tree by the Wailers. Of course, not Bob Marley and the Wailers, but
they're
called the Fabulous Wailers. That Out of Our Tree song is fantastic.
It is. I actually know that song.
Oh, really?
I do, yeah. I don't know why I know that song, but I know that song.
No Good News from the Weeds is really pretty spectacular. Just, you know, and I'm so kind of picky, so when I'm going through the stuff, like it's like, well, that song sounds the same, but something else that sounds a little more, you know, thicker rock, kind of like, you know, there's a song called Hey Freak by Bob Hocko and the Swamp Rats, if I'm pronouncing
that's a right. Great name. That sounds like the name of a band we would interview.
Yeah, right. The Sorrows is another band. The Remains, funny.
Yeah. Is there anything that catches you about the bass lines? Because, you know, playing bass is just something that kind of grabs you.
I will admit I gravitate towards the bass lines that don't sound too complicated. I can play that. And there's some that are like, yeah, skip. I'll learn to crawl before I learn to walk, or learn to, yeah, something like that.
Yeah. 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 What's your go-to bass right now?
I am now, and I think I can actually say this, because I always say I don't want to make a destination statement. But I'm pretty sure I am all Ibanez right now.
Okay.
Which I know a lot of I probably over imagine that there's the bass police going, hey, that's not a Fender Squire. That's not a Gibson Epiphone Thunderbird. But they're the neck is just so comfortable and thin. I mean, so this year, I know the people can't see it, but SR.
Ibanez are great players, man. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and then so just to compliment that, the mezzo, meaning medium scale, 32-inch scale.
Is that a seafoam green type or a blue? Yeah. What is that color? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a seafoam
green. Yeah, like a 60 style green. Yeah, I love it. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Looks good.
Yeah, no, they just, for me, they play very well. They're comfortable to play. I can play more and better on them. There is, you know, they do have active tone circuit, which sometimes I've been taboo against, and sometimes I'm okay with. You know, I might have to change.
You can do some metal with that. You can, yeah. You know, if you get I'm back not, into thrash, you can do it.
I'm not. I just think my calling is a metal player, but some of that garage '60s garage rock stuff is pretty thick on there. So, but what else is going on this week? We've been chatting on our chat group about the. Yeah, the Crow is re-releasing 99 pounds, or it's a version from that time.
Yeah, like I'll be honest, it sounds fine, but I don't care. Like, why do we want a third version of a song, like a song that's not anything major in the catalog?
Yeah.
They do weird stuff, man. Like, I just never understand their marketing approach. So it sounds fine. It's a cool version, but it doesn't make me excited about it.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It just makes me question why they do that.
Yeah, and you know. And I've been on our group, I've been pretty open about, you know, like criticizing their business and stuff. But, you know, it's like, give us something new, you know, please give us something new.
Yeah.
You know, right? I think that there's just, you know, I'm not going to go into long detail about this because I already did on our chat group. But, you know, there's some bands that I think still are trying to, and it's fine, I guess, if that's, you know, the model from back in the 90s, like, there was always a huge anticipation built up for the event of a record release and whatnot. But now some managers going, here it is, you know, here it is, you know, like the Stones, of course, which we'll have a whole episode about Hackney Diamonds with some of our friends, you know, just like release a song, record's coming up in a month. Here it is, you know, just simple, you know, and of course they obviously the Stones have done that a lot too, like the big, huge, you know, reveal and get excited and, but I just think with the Crows, it's just been going since the, you know, Rich and Chris got back together. It's been so like, dudes, they say you got something done, man. Just give us one song.
Get a taste, something, you know, a 30-second snippet, something to build the anticipation. I just don't get it. They did that 1972 covers record, why it sounded fine and good. It's like, who are they aiming their marketing at? Are they trying to build fans in the general public again? Or are they trying to satisfy the hardcore fans that have been with them since their, you know, inception? I don't know, Brian, because the decisions don't make sense for either group.
Well, I think it's kind of a mixed bag because Shake Your Moneymaker, of course, is, I think, as you know, directed back at the, you know, the fans that are most familiar.
But they played
with
it
that.
For three freaking years. The general public's not going to go see that same tour three times.
Yeah.
You know, who does is your hardcore fans. They're going to go watch you play three times because you change up the set and do different things. Yep. And so, you know, so I just, whatever, I know.
And I think
we get mad because we love, you know what I mean?
Like, oh,
we
for
love
sure,
that
yeah.
band, and that's why we get worked up over it.
1972, I think, was kind of more directed towards some more of the faithfuls, I think, in some ways. That seems like that 1972 doesn't seem like out of the ordinary of what they would have done.
Some of their covers and something, sure, but it's just, supposedly they have this new record or records worth of materials already recorded and ready to go. Like, let's hear it. Let's do something, guys. You're not touring right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always a method to my madness, and that's a good segue because we're talking about Atlanta rock and roll.
It with ties to the Black Crowes directly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
who are we talking about, Brian? Who did you find for us?
I came across Rare Birds. I don't remember how I come across bands. I just do. I came across Rare Birds and their earlier stuff I was listening to. It's kind of cool. And then their latest record came out, Atlanta, ATL. I'm like, wow, this is like really, really good, you know? And I had no idea, you know. Of course, we talked to Andrew Kyler, first of all. And, you know, he goes way, way, way back in, you know, in the Atlanta scene, which was very, very cool to hear.
Worked with Steve Gorman. Those,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, listen, he's a Andrew is a veteran of that scene, well respected and well liked. In fact, that band is made up of musicians that are known to the area and respected musicians. I'd sent Gorman a note on a DM on Twitter or X, whatever you call it, just to said we had those guys on, and he was super complimentary of Andrew and the band itself. So, you know, it's a great band, legacy from Atlanta. Carrying on that soul bluesy rock music, very, you know, it's got a little bit elements of the Crows, a little elements of the Stones, all the stuff that you and I like.
Yeah, for sure. So I know you guys will enjoy this too. So we had the pleasure of talking. We've already said Andrew Kyler from Rare Birds, and also on vocals and guitar, Brandon Neal also joined us, and it was a wonderful conversation and a great time was had for all. And I do believe a good time will be had for y'all listeners as well. So enjoy our conversation with Andrew Kyler and Brandon Neal from Rare Birds out of Atlanta. We're here at the guest segment of the podcast, and you guys know I always throw it over to Jason to introduce our first time awesome guests this week.
And we are very excited to have another great Georgia rock band. Like, they're all over the place. You can't get rid of them. But we got two dudes from the awesome Rare Birds Atlanta band. We have, I'm going to get this right, Andrew Kyler and Brandon Neal. Hey, guys. All right. I had to stop and think about it. Brian makes me introduce everybody, so I screw up names. It's like part of the show.
How's everything in Atlanta, GA, this great afternoon?
Great, wonderful, beautiful day.
Are you guys going to celebrate the Braves making the postseason? I mean, like the top team along with the Orioles.
Well, you know, in the area that we live in, the Braves used to actually play about four blocks down the street, and we wish them, you know, all the success in the world. But, you know, we're busy playing music.
Wait a minute. I think there's some underlying hard feelings here I'm getting.
No. It's all good.
Yeah. Was it the Fulton County Stadium, or was it the other? Yeah. Okay, Fulton, the launch pad.
Yes, the house that Hank built, yes. Literally, you know, right down the street. And Georgia State still plays football there, so, you know, it's still there.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
I love that stadium. Sorry, Brian, we're getting off. We're going to forget
the
first question. So I'm from Cincinnati. I grew up going to Riverfront, you know, Riverfront Stadium, Pittsburgh, Three Rivers, and Fulton County. They were all the exact stadiums.
Okay.
Exact same ones.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good bands from Cincinnati too.
There are. Absolutely. Yeah. There's some good music coming from there, but you know, I just, listen, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. You had TBS on TV. You couldn't watch. I could watch more Braves games than Reds games.
Oh, TBS, yes. Thank you, Ted Turner.
Thank you, Ted. Brian, let's
go ahead. Before the cookie cutter question, I got to ask you, like, how far are you guys from Little Five Points? Because, like, the first time I would have ever heard of Little Five Points was in the Black Crowes episode of Behind the Music. And it at one time, I don't know if it still is, but it was we've had Steve Gorman on twice, and he told us, like, when he first got there in 87, it was very much like a mixing pot of musicians and artists. And is it like that now? Are you anywhere near there with Little Five Points?
Well, I know and love Steve Gorman, have known him for years. Steve and I used to work at a place called Fellini's together.
And
it's kind of how to put it, the best way I can describe it is Fellini's used to have, we used to put the beer coolers where the public could go, and it's like self-serve. So if you get this idea, there was like self-serve beer in a place that was owned by a musician and had mostly musicians working there. And so it was a lot of fun. So back at that time, there were just all sorts of different bands that would kind of come in to Little Five Points, you know, like any day you might look up and it might be the guys from COC might be coming through, or you look up and there's that's that dude from the Lemonheads, or that's that, you know, different bands would come in and just kind of hang out. And it was just an interesting time, and, you know, and also back in that period of time, it seemed like either everyone was in a band or trying to start a band. And there was like all these, you know, all these warehouses all over Atlanta where you'd go into, and it was just like walking into a bee's nest. It was just like nothing but, you know, drums and, you know, loud amps and everything coming out of these, you know, carpeted rooms, and just tons of bands going back there. I mean, Charlie was around back then. Yeah, played in a band called Bitch. We used to share a room with him. I mean, you know, there's just it was a fun time.
Well, go ahead, Jason.
Well, before you get into a real question, we talked to Charlie a couple times, and he told us that Chris Robinson originally wanted to call the Blackberry Smoke to call themselves a specific name. Do you know which name he wanted them? He told them they should be called.
I will say this: one of the names that Chris he used to always try to get people. He would go, you should name your band Krishna Pig. He would come up with these names. And I know that, if I'm not mistaken, Blackberry Smoke was one of the names that he helped.
He did.
Yeah. But
yep, he did.
But, you know, Chris is pretty funny that way. He's like, any day you ask him, he will have 5 band names that he will just throw at you. But Krishna Pig was one of my favorites.
Brian, what was the name that Charlie Starr said Chris wanted to be called?
Well, one is like a one name that he took on himself, and the other one is, you know, New Earth Mud, and that's, you know, that's yeah. normal. That's normal. The other one was Sweatpants Boner.
Yeah, that's good. That's good on a t-shirt.
I think you have to be a punk band, though. If you're going to be called Sweatpants Boner, you have to be a punk band or something.
I'm getting some very sentimental power ballad kind of lyrical ideas as we're talking.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think we got something there. Yeah, the joke would be, you have to be able to pull it off. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I definitely want to circle back to this stuff as we go along. We should get to where, you know, if, you know, you guys can each, you know, give us some, a little bit of like how you got started in music and then skip ahead to how Rare Birds became a band. So.
Okay. Yeah, I can go first.
All right.
Yeah. So I guess I started music up in, I was living up in East Tennessee, you know, born and raised before I moved down to Atlanta. So I started up there, you know, playing in church, playing a lot of gospel, a lot of, you know, like Rolling Stones cassette tapes, some old country, like some Patsy Cline and some Hank Williams, you know, cassette tapes in the back of my dad's car. And that kind of like gospel meets kind of country meets Exile on Main Street. You know, these are kind of some pivotal things for me that all kind of smushed together. And, you know, started out kind of supporting some bands, playing whatever country up in Knoxville. You know, if you can play guitar and you have a Telecaster, you can play anything, right? Like you can fake it.
Here you go.
Like, oh,
there,
man, chicken picking. Like,
I'm ready to go to Knoxville. Let's go.
Yeah. So kind of that, coming from kind of that background, and then moving down to Atlanta, and then meeting up with like Andrew and Sean and, you know, these guys, kind of turning that background, molding it with kind of theirs, blending it with theirs, has been really cool because they let me, you know, have my Hank Williams, you know, while Andrew's over here, you know, with his, you know, his Free and his Jimmy and all this stuff. And I think I couldn't be happier with that.
Likewise. Yeah. Here you go.
I can, yeah. Anything you want to say?
I've just been doing it a long time, and there's, I mean, I say it all the time. There's really nothing like, I mean, you can play an instrument, but there's really nothing like being in a room with other musicians, and, you know, just having that space in between notes, and, you know, having something come to life, because it really is a, you know, that's the thing that you can't replace. I mean, you can't, you know, you can sit down and strum along with whatever else, but it's hard to kind of replace that feeling that you get with other musicians.
Andrew, did you grow up in the Georgia Atlanta area?
I actually grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and I moved down here to go to school, but I've literally been here forever.
Man, yeah. I was liking you, now finding out you're from
Cleveland. Oh, here we go. Cleveland Brown.
We're supposed to like each other.
Yeah,
man.
Now. All right.
Come on.
Bring it on.
You sounded like a nice guy. Now I'm not so sure.
That works. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so, both of our teams are struggling this year into the season.
Oh, struggling when you pay someone $230 million. That's a new kind of struggling.
That is, you know, you think you'd get both legs for that price.
Ah, well, yeah, well, I mean, well, we'll see how it goes. But
yeah,
early reports aren't looking good.
So how about was Rare Birds born?
Okay.
When you're like getting serious, okay, we're going to do this. This is the band. This is.
Well, so Sean Becker, who is the drummer in our band, myself and Suzanne Sledge, we had a band called 6875.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We know, yeah, Suzanne.
We haven't had her on, but I've chatted with her.
Yeah, there you go. So 6875 was, in fact, we used to share a room with Charlie Starr when he was in a band called Bitch, and he had like a couple other bands. And Charlie and Suzanne both grew up in the Columbus area.
Yeah.
So, you know, fast forward a million years, Suzanne had moved up to Atlanta, and she's you know, traditionally kind of more of a blues singer. And so she and I put a band together, and we, you know, we struggled around Atlanta, and then somehow we managed to, you know, do a couple of UK tours. And, you know, it's funny, it's like, you know, something that we were doing here in Atlanta, we did it over there and people got it. So long story short, we came back from a tour, and it was time to put it on hiatus. And so Sean Thacker ended up playing the very last 68-75 show that we did at Smith's Old Bar with Suzanne and I. And he was literally, you know, you would think it would be like kind of like a somber affair, but Sean was so great. Like literally as soon as we, you know, hit the last note, I was running over to him and saying, "Hey man, we need to go ahead and try to put something together." And so I talked him into getting together with another friend of mine named Justin Sanker. And Justin is the bass player in Atlanta Rhythm Section. So, so we got in the basement and we were making noise and, you know, trying to get something going. And we ended up finding Brandon and sent him some recordings. And we were just thinking, well, we'll just see what happens. And he came in and literally, you know, sparks. So, and literally we've been running with it since then, you know, because Brandon kind of came in and, you know, we didn't say, "Hey man, this is the inspiration point. This is what we're trying to do." We didn't say any of that stuff to him. He just came in with something that made us know that we were talking the same language, and he got it. And so we've been running with that, you know, like I said, ever since.
How did you find Brandon though? He's over in Tennessee doing his country western and chicken picking thing.
He's a Craigslist killer.
It was the best.
Now that's the name of a band. I'm
there
sorry.
You go. Yeah. Not
what band's but Craigslist killer. That's
yeah,
a great one.
Yeah. That's
literally, I think, yeah, you sent me an MP. Craigslist, you sent me an MP3. I sent you an MP3. Yeah. That was.
If you ever want a fun weekend, just put an ad in Craigslist and, you know.
I'll just show up.
Name a couple bands and just see what you get. Yeah, it's fun, man.
So okay, so how'd you guys hook up? Were you in Tennessee? Did you come over? Were you already in the Atlanta area?
Yeah, so I was moving down from Tennessee. Moved down to Atlanta. I was down here for a couple months, and I, you know, obviously. Got the itch where it's like, all right, I had my thing back home, moving down here. I want to see what's down here, going to shows. And then how do I do something? And I literally I got lucky. I looked on Craigslist and some dude's like, "Hey, we're looking to start a rock band. We need a singer."
Yes.
I'm like, "No more information needed." Yes. You know, I will. And I mean, literally, I think there was literally like two or three emails. And out of nowhere, I got lucky. I moved down here not really knowing much of anybody, just trying to go to shows, and pretty grateful for that.
Yeah.
Did you know you wanted to move over to more of a rock, southern rock, you know, genre?
Definitely. I mean, the country thing that I had done paid a lot of bills when I was in school. Mm-hmm. You can pay a wedding and play Tim McGraw. And you can get that guaranteed check every weekend. But I got to come down here, and the gospel and rock and roll were the two things that I loved more than anything. And so then coming down to Atlanta, seeing some shows like in Little Five, like y'all were saying, that was one of the first neighborhoods, you know, that I went to. I mean, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And then, like I said, Andrew kind of sent me something him and Sean and Justin had worked up. Just kind of a rock track, guitar, bass, drums. And I was like, that's it. I want to do that sound.
And he's leaving out the biker birthday parties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Up in East Tennessee. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The corn pone across from the strip club. There's some nights playing country music that you can see some things that you might
can't unsee.
You might see them, you know, a couple nights a month in your dreams and wake up sweating.
It's all good. It's
So definitely glad to be out of that. Rock and roll, yes. Not seeing leather around ankles, good. From the state.
Well, Brian, I think we may have one of the answers in our lightning round. We always ask first time guests that we'll probably get some expansion on. So, we'll, Brandon, we'll get good background on that. Andrew, for you, you played with a lot of great vocalists and a lot of around a lot of great rock vocalists. Like, what was it about Brandon that really kind of drew you into? No, that's the guy you want singing for your band.
Well, there's so many things. One is that again, we always talk about space, but he has great command. He's a great storyteller. So, I mean, that's, it's hard to kind of put into words, but it's like when you listen to someone sing, if you believe what they're saying, if you are listening to what they're saying and feel like, like there's something in it, like there's, it's not like just somebody singing over you. It's actually somebody, having a conversation with you. And he's got that gift. It's like, if you were to really kind of look at the lyrics of a lot of our songs, I mean, they're, Nocturnal Woman of Action, they kind of run the gamut, but all of those are just like every single one of those songs. It's like a great conversation. It's like, you're having somebody, tell you something over a beer that you'd want to hear.
Now that you said those names of those songs and hearing a little bit about his background, I'm seeing where the inspiration for maybe some of these come from. Nocturnal Woman, Woman of Action. I mean, come on.
I think a fun part of what we do, and I'm incredibly grateful and love kind of the dynamic that we have as a band in general. But man, I can show up at Andrew's place and he'll have like a riff with a title that has no sense. Words, just literally the most insane words. I don't know where he gets it from. I'll show up. He'll be like, this is, I can't even think, like Jacksonville Bowie. That's just like a random example of just, here's two words. And then we'll kind of jiff on it. I'll come up with some melodies. And then I kind of sit with him like, oh man, that title has something I can work with that.
Yeah.
And he lets me play with that. And I don't even know where he comes up with half the stuff, man.
But. Yeah. We have a song called Thistledown. And Thistledown, it's funny because when I was a kid, I worked at a movie theater that was across the street from Thistledown Horse Racing. That's up in Ohio. And I was telling Brandon kind of the story of, like riding the bus to work. And you're riding the bus and you're seeing all these people and they've kind of got their horse sheets and they're all, they're either in a great mood because they think they know something that nobody else knows, or they're, they got their hopes and dreams, and then you get on that bus after work and you're on that bus with these people who are riding the bus to the horse track. And, you got everybody from maybe the one or two people who have actually won and everybody else who kind of maybe lost some money that they shouldn't have bet. And I was telling Brandon that story and, it's amazing. He's like, he was able to kind of take that one little nugget and, do something amazing and, tell a really, kind of a universal story, I think, in Thistledown, if you get a chance to listen to that.
That's the first song on the new record.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So I don't know if this will end up being a question as much of just like a observation or whatever, but this conversation is turning out even more than what I hoped. Along with our obsession with Kentucky rock and roll is also Georgia rock and roll. And
a lot of good Kentucky bands.
Yeah. And you can go back as far as Otis Redding. And then of course, Satellites and the Crows and Driving and Crying and Blackberry Smoke and on. And
Other Finest. Yep.
And you guys, the Thunderbolts, there's a band called One for the Road. I think they're from around where the Thunderbolts are, and Benji Shanks is from there and stuff. So I know I've heard Charlie say that, like, when he was younger in high school, he's like, well, he thought him and his buddies were going to move to LA. And he said he's glad that they didn't do that. So it's just always been like a scene for you, or just the place to be. And we also recently talked to Tony Higbee I don't know if you know Tony or not, that plays with Tom Kiefer's band, was in Cinderella. And
oh, okay. Yeah.
But is that it's always been just the place to be. Like it's because so many people, they'll go to LA or they'll go to Nashville or whatever. So that's just always been, Atlanta's been it for you, and you carried on that tradition.
I mean, Atlanta's kind of a different vibe. It's in one sense, it's very much a big city. And then in other senses, it's kind of like a Mayberry thing, like almost I can blindfold it, just drive and walk into any bar and I could probably talk to someone. And within naming five or six people, I will know someone that they know or they knew of. You know, so mm-hmm. There's always some sort of weird, especially when you're talking about music, there's some weird connection. And there was always been, like, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Satellites. I remember literally, you know, there's a music store here called Atlanta Discount. And I'm not kidding you. At one point you would walk into Atlanta Discount and Dan Baird was, you know, working there. Peter Stroud was working there. Jimmy Bocamp, one of my favorite guitar players that, you know, probably nobody ever talks about is a guy named Jimmy Bocamp. But the funny thing is Jimmy Bocamp worked there and gave advice to all these guitar players. And one of the guitar players that I remember that, you know, I'd walk in there sometimes and he'd be talking to was this guy named Dave Cobb, who, you know, and it's,
some random guy, Dave Cobb. Man.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, you'd walk into a music store and literally, you know, whether you bought something or not, you know, you'd walk out with some sort of knowledge, either somebody telling you, you know, this sounds good, maybe you should try this with that, or, you know, giving you some ideas, or, you know, or just sometimes, you know, I just walk in, there used to be a guy named Luther House Rocker Johnson. And Luther House Rocker Johnson, wow, a blues player. And you know, when I would kind of pull into the parking lot, it was always like the biggest treat because he drove this burgundy, you know, Cadillac. And so you always knew when Luther was there, and Luther was so cool. He would, he'd pull up in his burgundy Cadillac and he'd keep the car running because he always had his girlfriend sitting in the car, you know, keep the air on, and you'd walk in and Luther would be in there, you know, playing guitars, and he'd have like a matching, he'd always have like a suit that matched his car. He'd always have, man, and he was just the coolest dude. And I would literally, you know, try to pretend like I was walking around looking at other things. And the whole thing, I was just, you know, every time he would pick up a guitar, I would just listen to what he did, watch how he played, man, because he was just a great guitar player. Just so cool, man. Love that guy.
You're mentioning that music story, you talk about Dan Baird, and it reminded me of the story of, you know, the guitar, the Charlie Starr, this black Les Paul Jr. I can't remember the store where he bought that, but it used to be Rick Richards' guitar.
He bought that at Clark Music. Yeah. And it used to belong to Rick Richards. But, you know, and Rick he's another one of those guys that, you know, he's like, he's a hero. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've seen him just, you know, like literally just walk up on stage and it's just like it's automatic. He just doesn't matter which guitar he's playing, whether it's a Firebird or he's playing a Junior or whatever, or what band he's sitting in. He's just like an amazing guitar player, you know?
And so also for you, Brandon, you're like, you're from Knoxville, you know, what instinct to go to Atlanta versus Nashville, you know, what was there a scene ever going on there in Knoxville? I know we've had a band called the Dirty Gospel on, it's from there. So what for your vibe, like what leads you to go, I'm going to Atlanta, I'm not going to stay here or go to Nashville?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's some great, you know, cats up in Knoxville. I mean, you know, the Dirty Governors, I guess they were kind of, when I was first getting in, they were coming out. I mean, just recently, Adeem, the artist, right, playing the Ryman, a songwriter, you know, they're awesome. But I mean, and there's a lot of good music up in Knoxville. It feels like it's almost kind of a crossroads sometimes of, you got Chattanooga, Nashville, and kind of Asheville, and right, 75, all lanes of 75 and I-40 lead to Knoxville. So there wasn't a shortage of very talented people that are still up there. For me, it was that, you know, I'd been born and raised, you know, just kind of right outside of Knoxville. And I just wanted, I'd been, you know, a few years younger. I just wanted to do something. I wanted to go somewhere I didn't know. I wanted to see a scene that I didn't know. And that's what kind of drove me. I spent a summer in Nashville. And I got some buddies that are, you know, playing guitar out there. Jeremiah Baker, that's a bad man if you ever hear his name around. And I spent literally living over on Music Row. I rented a room out there. And that just, that there was a difference between living in Nashville and looking at that kind of established scene and this kind of like, you know, these pillars and this like these ceramic walls of this is what we do here. Do you want to come here and do here? Are you willing to play at McDonald's at 7 a.m. on a Sunday so that you can maybe play, you know, at 3 p.m. on a Friday? And then Atlanta coming down and seeing these clubs, it was a city that I hadn't spent much time in. And there was just rock and roll going on. And Nashville has that too, man. Like, you know, not to speak down on Nashville, obviously, but the rock and roll side of things in Atlanta, I think that was kind of when I saw that compared to trying to fight my way through Nashville to find that in Nashville versus coming to Atlanta and getting lucky and coming to a couple clubs where that was happening. That for me, I moved out of Nashville pretty quick after that.
And then my next question would be like, what's it like for you? Like, were you aware of what Andrew had done up to that point when you met him, like who he played with and all that? Because I'm list hearing his stories about who he knows, and it's like, oh my god, I'm like, my jaw's on the floor, like I just want to hear all these stories. So what was that like for you? You get to, you know, you hook up with Andrew in this band, and you're his experience and people, he, that kind of vibe, is that, am I like kind of overstating that, or was that,
from my perspective,
amazing is for you?
No, from my perspective, you described it the same way that I saw it, and same way that I see it sometimes coming over here with Andrew. I mean, that's still with Andrew, I did not know. I came down so ignorant of anything. I just literally came down. That's an all-encompassing statement. Ignorant of anything.
All right. Andrew, I don't hear you disagreeing with him. So, he's not defending you.
Yes. Specifically coming down to Atlanta, I was trying to throw myself into something that I didn't know much about and a scene I didn't know much about. And I literally cannot overstate how lucky that I feel and how grateful that I am that I ran into Andrew and I ran into Sean and Justin at the time. And
likewise, the funny thing is we all feel that way.
But like you say, jaw on the floor, man. That's, dude, coming over here, I'm sitting in Andrew's house right now. So when I'm saying come over here, I'm over in Andrew's house, man, coming into this basement, man. And you walk in with him and you can literally pull into the driveway and you just, you know, you just hear this tone, just this, I'm sorry, my words are failing me.
Because it's loud. It's loud.
You can't. Like, it just, it makes you want to work, and no one works harder than Andrew. I know that. And man, I'm lucky. That's my response.
We're all lucky. We're feeling good. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. That's the whole thing. So we're happy to talk to you guys. We're happy to, you know, try to get the word out and, you know.
And I'm ignorant to everything. I'm going on record as saying I'm ignorant to everything.
And we're making it worse. That's our job. We make it worse.
Well, you guys have a great record here, man. And I heard this and I'm telling everybody, like, you got to, like, man, I don't know if it's fair to compare or whatever, but like, when I first listened to this, it grabbed me the way Cry of Love Brother did. You know, it's just like, wow. So you guys get a great record here, and it's fitting in so well with everything we listen to, and, you know, right in there with that same kind of vibe as Blackberry Smoke and the Thunderbolts and everything that's going on there, man. You just have just a great record.
And love Oddly Free. Man, love Oddly. Oddly is amazing. Man. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean your record for me, yeah. Same with Brian. It's just, you've got the blues rock, great blues rock, classic rock sound, and then you have this like soulful gospel vocals along with it, and it's, I mean, it stuck out to me too. And thank heavens for your PR person who sent Brian and I records and press releases and stuff too. But I've also been listening to it online, and there's like 14 tracks, I think, if you stream it. I don't think is there that many on the physical disc?
What we did is we have the new record is actually 9 songs. And then we, on the physical disc or the physical media, we put 14 songs because we figured, you know, if we're going to do a disc, we might as well.
Yeah. You
know. So we threw on we had an EP that we had done with Jeff Tomei, because Jeff Tomei is the guy who did the engineered and recorded the record. In fact, we did that out at Jesse Dupree's studio. It's called Cock of the Walk. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
Jesse from Jackal. Everybody calls him Jesse from Jackal. So Jesse's got like an amazing studio out in Kennesaw. And, you know, so we went out there and recorded those. And we just decided, because those tracks all kind of sounded like they went together, so we just decided to put all 14 of those tracks together on the disc. When the vinyl comes out, it'll probably just have the 9 songs, because you can't really, you know, the more tracks you put on vinyl, it kind of degrades the sound. So we'll probably just stick with the 9 songs on the vinyl. But we're already, you know, the funny thing about it, we're already working on, we've got 18 songs that we've got recorded in the can that we're going to start trying to mix and get those out, you know, hopefully sometime in 2024.
So I wanted to ask about the song Dolly Parton, because you're earlier Brandon's talking about getting song titles or words here or there. How did that one come about?
So that one, like I was saying, a lot of times it's Andrew has a title that I come up to and I'm like, all right, we'll play with that. That one, I guess, again, you know, being from up in East Tennessee, Dolly Parton is she's a hero up there, all the good that she's done up there for everybody. And so we were writing songs, and we were talking about how, you know, there was one, you know, it's of the stuff of legend, right, where she writes, I Will Always Love You and Jolene in the same day. Right. And we're sitting here kind of banging our heads against the wall, trying to put together a song in the basement. Like, what's wrong with us? Like, you know, why can we not write, you know, two all timers in one night? And I think, you know, we're just kind of, I don't even think the song never says Dolly Parton. I don't think the song lyrically or, you know, in its movement is by any means derivative of Dolly Parton or referential to Dolly Parton. But I think it was kind of when we were just in that moment. Yeah. Writing the song, that was kind of the energy. I mean, that's something I want to write. I'll Always Love You, you know, like, so I'll keep naming songs, whatever I got to name.
Sweatpants Boner, soon to be an all-timer.
Yeah.
That ballad.
And, you know, Dolly's getting in on the rock game now, so maybe we'll get a feature on Sweatpants Boner. I'm sorry.
Dolly Parton writes about Sweatpants
Boner. This feels blasphemous. I feel like I...
It kind of is.
So Andrew, you mentioned Jeff Tomei and Cock of the Walk, and I've chatted a little bit briefly with Jeff, and we hope to get him on sometime. But what can you say about him as a producer in that studio? I know we got some, I don't know if you know some guys in a band called Stone Harvest that did some work there too. This guy Matt.
No, I have. I'll write it down and make sure I check him out. But man, anybody who, I mean, Jeff is a stone wizard, man. He is literally, and it's funny because, you know, we're the band that comes into the studio that has 100 ideas and no money. so we're literally
spend a lot of time messing around while the cards roll. So,
you know, and Jeff is just so cool, because I'll literally be sitting there and I'll be talking to him about, well, this, you know, this track on Exile, and oh man, or this track, you know, if you listen to Free on this track, or if you listen to, you know, Humble Pie, you know, on this track or something like that. And, you know, and Jeff would just kind of nod and kind of, you know, listening to you. And one day I was talking to Jeff, and I caught myself in mid sentence. And I said, I know I'm talking to you about, you know, records that were recorded over, you know, like a month or 2 months, and we're trying to do it in like 3 days. And he goes, yeah. But still, he's like really great with, like, you could say like a couple things to him and he kind of gets it, and he tries to give you that back. But he's just, man, just watching that guy mix, it's like, it's it's amazing, like how quickly he can just kind of pull all those elements together and kind of, you know, make it work.
Didn't he work on some of Blackberry Smoke's demo? And did they do the first record there at Cock of the Walk?
I believe they did. And he's done, man, God, he's done, you know, he used to work over at, he did the Smashing Pumpkins records. He was working on some of those. He's done stuff with Jerry Cantrell. He's done stuff with, man, I mean, literally, if you go to Rocket Productions and you just kind of look at who Jeff has been in the room with, and then, you know, and us. So, yeah, he's amazing to work with. He's a good guy, and I can't recommend him or heading out to that studio enough. It's kind of a cool place.
When you were trying to remember the name of the studio, like Southern Tracks came into my head, and then Brendan O'Brien came into my head.
So there's Southern Tracks, and I can't think of the. And it's funny because I literally just bought a Marshall cabinet that belonged to the guy Richard who used to run. The studio, it'll come to me. It's the studio that Butch Vig, when they came down to Atlanta to do Sammy's Dream, they did it in Atlanta, and I'm just completely drawing a blank, but I mean 100 people have recorded there. They did the the Matchbox 20 stuff. They you name it, there was like a run that they had where they were just kind of like through those doors, and everything that would kind of come through those doors would, leave with a gold record.
Did he work with Brendan O'Brien at all? And is Brendan O'Brien an Atlanta guy?
Jeff worked with Brendan. So, I had a band called the Blood Poets that worked with Brendan. Brendan used to have a studio. It was on West Peachtree Street. And this is like early days. And, you'd go in and Brendan like literally would be in one corner of the room. It didn't really even have like a proper, barrier between the band. He just had like a mixing desk over there. And Brendan would kind of sit over on the other side of the room and you would play and try to do your song. And then Brendan would make some, like, okay. And then you would just do it. And then he'd, mix it and hand you something. You'd walk out with it. That's what, back when everything was like on ADATs. So,
oh my gosh,
Brendan's another one of those guys who's just like amazing. But what people, as great as Brendan is as a producer, he is that badass as a guitar player. Like, seriously, if you ever want to walk out humble, walk into a music store when Brendan's hanging out with a Telecaster over his neck, just kind of noodling. and you leave the music store and you just go, man, I need to go practice.
Well, Brendan's great. He played the solo on Hard to Handle, right? I believe.
Rumor has it. So,
Well, I said we were going to circle back around to this, and I think I just decided, like, humorous, funny, affectionate, pride, competition. We've got some friends that have a Black Crowes podcast called State of America. So, cool. What I'm wondering, like, you're talking about Little Five Points, you ever hang out at Steve and Chris and Sven's house? You had any stories for us?
I remember that house was on Oakdale. So, I'm trying to think of a story that I can actually tell. It was an interesting period of time that, the funny thing about, Steve used to have this Vespa motor scooter, like a scooter.
I can't imagine big Steve Gorman riding his Vespa.
Oh man, if you ever have Steve back on, you need to just have Steve just kind of recount the vehicles that he had. He had a Dodge Dart he ended up having to give the car away. I don't think he could sell it, so he had given it away. But he used to have this Vespa that he rode, and he didn't have a headlight on it. I think he got pulled over a couple times because he didn't have a headlight on it. So he got a flashlight and he duct taped it between the handlebars and the Vespa. And sometimes you'd hear Steve coming down the road and you'd see like this little dim light and you'd hear them, you'd hear it before you actually saw him. And he'd come roaring up, and he'd have the flashlight on the Vespa, and he'd have some sort of swimming goggles or something, on. Oh, and that was it, man. But those were fun times, man.
Also, when we talked to Steve, we were talking about back history camaraderie between those guys and Blackberry Smoke, and of course, even before they were Blackberry Smoke. But Britt and Richard, they ran a rehearsal place there in Atlanta somewhere.
Yeah, that was called Rehearse Too Much. So they so there was a warehouse there called Rehearse Too Much. Now, I don't know if Steve told you a story. Britt and Richard had they had a band back then called Nihilus.
Right.
Nihilus was badass, and Nihilus was just like the funny thing, because I remember we had a room there, and you could if you were rehearsing at the same time that Nihilus was rehearsing, you could hear yourself play while you were playing, but as soon as you stopped playing, it was all you could hear was Nihilus. It was like they were playing in your room, because they when they would rehearse, they would mic the drums and push the drums through the PA. So it was like they rehearsed like they were on stage, and so it was seriously loud. Yeah, but they were a great band. They were amazing.
Right on. So Jason, is it that time of the show?
Guys, you want to answer some stupid questions and maybe fight amongst yourselves?
I do stupid best.
That's called rehearsal.
That's called rehearsal. Yeah. All right, we'll start out regularly, some musically oriented. All right, I can see Brandon, you like Fender. Andrew, you're smart. You like Gibson. Make a case for either of those brands to be the best guitar.
Telecaster can do anything you want it to do. Just a little bit of play with that tone knob, and I swear, man, I've got a couple Telecasters, and one of them will be hot as a junior sometimes, it feels like, and the other one will be so trebly that I put it up and I pick up the one that sounds like a junior. So that's my pitch on why on that side. Why am I wrong?
All right, you are not wrong, and a Fender will actually stay in tune. but a Gibson is something that Paul Kossoff played, and it's something that Peter Green played, Jimmy Page played, and something that a lot of great people played. But most importantly, if you are at the end of the month and you are short on your rent, you can take a Gibson to a pawn shop, and you might have a good chance of getting your rent. So.
That sounded oddly specific, very specific, Andrew.
Yeah.
okay. Well, I like Gibson and
Fenders. Yeah, we're admiring it. It's a good wall, man.
I lean to my Gibsons a little bit more, my special and my standard, but I do like a Telecaster if I'm picking up a Fender.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. If you guys had to play a gig with only one guitar and one amp, what are you choosing?
Andrew's guitar and Andrew's amp. And I stand up there and I sing. That's an easy one.
All right, Andrew, it's on you. Pick your guitar and pick your amp. Nothing else. Guitar amp.
Let's see. Only one guitar, only one amp. I would take a Les Paul, and I would take a Marshall.
And
are you an open pickup or a closed pickup type of guy, like Les Paul?
These are getting specific.
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
I tend to like the covers on the pickups. Yeah. Back when Clapton and everybody was, when they were pulling the covers off of their, their pickups, they were trying to just get their guitars louder, because back then it's like there weren't you couldn't step on a stomp box or if you had a stomp box, it wouldn't do what kind of get that more aggressive presence that they were trying to go for. But you're sweating on your guitar a lot. There's a lot, the cover helps,
Yeah.
Protects the guitar somewhat. But you know,
I'm kind of with you on that. It's so they're pretty powerful as it is, and that just helps, I think, bring in check.
Yeah, yeah. But you know,
but somebody again, like Slash, you know, likes the open ones.
Yeah,
so he's loud.
But, yeah. So, but I certainly get it. I mean, I remember when you know, people used to butcher Marshall amps just to try to, you know, you had this like super loud amp, and you know, they would put master volumes and all these sorts of different things on them to try to, you know, make them work, but they work when they're just kind of stock.
Do you play a standard? Like what's your go-to Les Paul?
The correct answer is whatever one I can afford, but I like standards. Standards are great. I've got two standards, and I like Les Paul Juniors a whole
lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Les Paul Juniors. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, it's funny. You can play a riff on, any guitar that I can hand you. But then sometimes if I play that same riff on a Les Paul Junior, and all of a sudden it starts to spark. Just something, you know, I'm a big Leslie West fan, man. I just, you know.
The P90s Gibson makes are so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. So, well, it's probably the one thing that they haven't overthought. Like, I don't, you know, it seems like they've got like 60 versions of a humbucker, and maybe, you know, when the first one they had was the one that was perfect, they shouldn't have done it.
Right. Yeah.
But the P90, it's kind of like, you know, it's great and they haven't really screwed it up yet.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody's from, you know, it's not like Gibson's calling me and asking me my opinion. So.
You never know with this band, man. You guys got something going on. You never know.
Yeah. That'll be the world's loneliest signature.
Maybe. We'll see. I'll take a run at it. You get one? I love the sound on the record. Yeah.
I'm going to call him.
Okay. So I know one guy who will buy this.
Yes. Yes.
Brandon, you got to answer this question because you also play guitar. Like, you got it. Like, if you're picking one of your guitars and an amp to be on stage with, what are you doing?
I'm picking my, it's an American Standard Tele. Yep. It's like the one you got back there, white.
Yeah, mine's a black pick guard, special Tele though.
But Maple Neck is my, I love it. And then, man, right now I'm playing through a Fender custom reverb that sounds really good. That said, and so that's what I'm going to play. I'm going to play that Tele. I'm going to play that Fender. That said, when we were at Jeff Tomei's, and I think we were recording Dolly Parton, he had it was just a little Princeton, like a little thing set up on the rack, man. And we had that at like at a 6 or 7, you know, no pedals, just the Tele going into that. And that's kind of something that I've kind of, that I want to emulate that. You can, I think it's Dolly Parton might be where you hear, or maybe Got Me Fiendin', where you just hit that F and just that, those top three strings, the way it chimes, that is what I want to sound like. I want every amp to sound like that.
All right.
So specifically Jeff Tomei's Princeton.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that,
good.
Does
that, that's a, I mean, that's very specific. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll switch gears a little bit. Brandon, we'll start with you. What is a lyric or a song that somebody wrote that you wish that you would have written?
So Dolly Parton aside.
You just hear it and you're like, man, Dolly Parton aside.
Dolly Parton aside. What are lyrics that I wish I had written?
Yeah, like you just hear a song or read the lyrics, you're like, man, I just get chills and like I aspire to do that.
I would say there's a couple songs for me that I think are like the greatest songs ever written in my pantheon, and that probably everybody else would say, okay, shut up. Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain by Willie Nelson. Doesn't sound like anything that we do at all. I think one time I brought a girl home from a bar and she asked me to play something on guitar. And I played her that song, and she said, "This sucks." But I maintain. But
and you got to leave.
And then what happened?
but
strikeout. No,
I called a cab.
I would say so that, and then I'm gonna also say, it have to be something from church. I mean, I'm gonna sound stupid and sticky, but literally old hymns sung without instrumentation will always move me. I'm just gonna say It Is Well, sung by a strong woman with a tenor, and just that deep It Is Well. Anyway, I don't want to get good too ugly with it because I'm not.
Okay.
I'm just, yeah.
Anything by Mavis Staples.
There you go. Yeah, see.
No, Mavis Staples.
Anything by Mavis Staples.
Take my 50 words and say it in three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrew, for you, what's a guitar riff or solo that somebody has that you're like, damn, I wish I'd wrote that?
Well, my favorite one, well, I won't say it's not my favorite, but Neil Young's Cinnamon Girl, because it's super simple.
Yeah.
But it has,
sounds cool.
Yeah, but it has emotion. And to me, I mean the thing that you're always trying to do with a guitar is, you know, you're basically trying to, you know, in a way sing. You're trying to play something that has some emotion and that moves. And, you know, some people can do that with a lot of notes, and some people, you know, Gary Clark Jr. can do it with, you know, fewer notes. You know, I'm a big Paul Kossoff fan. I love the way he plays. He doesn't play a lot of notes, but each one of them has some meaning. I mean, you know, you any one of the Kings, B.B. King, Albert King, Freddie King.
Albert King,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And our music actually sounds like some of that. So,
yeah. What'd you say, Brandon?
I was saying our music actually sounds like some of those influences. So
it does. Like, I'll be honest with you. When you got on camera, well, I'd seen a couple pictures, but not really play close. I expected you to be older just by your voice. Like, you have such a I don't want to call it old voice, like mature, experienced voice.
It's kind of like Boone.
Yeah, we're wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you know what, you know what I mean?
He feels older.
Yeah. Okay. What is a guilty pleasure snack for both of you, or food item?
I will say crystals. Do y'all have crystals up there?
They're called White Castle where I'm from.
Okay.
And as Andrew knows.
White Castle is good.
Come here, buddy. Deacon, come here, man.
Sorry. Yeah, Deacon. Hey, buddy.
We are a pet-friendly podcast. We have pets, and they always join us.
Man, a sack full of crystals has gotten me through several nights. You can stretch those 12 little burgers out quite a ways and then feel them a few days later. Yeah, that's my guilty pleasure.
Okay, I like it.
It's good
answer.
That you mentioned the burgers, because if you said a sack full of crystals to get you through the night, you'd be like, hey,
what type of crystals are you talking about?
Hey, man. Yeah. That means what that means to you. I don't know. No.
We Josh.
Andrew, how about you?
I eat without guilt or shame. So, I mean,
what's your go-to snack on the road then? Like, you know, you pull in a gas station or when you got to get something at 2 a.m. in the morning.
And let's see. I'm trying to think of a delicate way to put this. I've learned over the years that I try not to eat those types of things on the road, because you got to get back in a van with a bunch of people. So
you mean like a sack of crystals?
Yeah, yeah. I would not do that to. Yeah.
It gets real guilty.
That's if you're traveling on a solo acoustic tour, you take that thing, not if you're doing it with the band.
Something in a gas station that I would eat, and then again, it would be without
like are you combos, Funyuns, you know, Lay's potato chips, you want beef jerky? I mean, what do you want? You want a candy bar?
Not a big candy person, not a big I'm trying to think of something that if I saw it, I would go, man, I haven't had that. And I would eat it. I try not to eat anything that's under a heat lamp.
Like that last hot, sad hot dog that's spinning, that's all wrinkled. Yeah, and just,
You know, I don't eat any sushi or anything like that. I probably have a bigger list of things that I wouldn't eat. I'll have to get back to you on that.
So do you guys know Dorothy?
Pardon?
Dorothy Martin from the band Dorothy.
Okay. We'll
check her out. Anyways, so I think you're going to say a gas station sushi is bad, but Dorothy swore to us in San Diego the best sushi she's ever had is at a gas station.
God bless
Brian, right?
Wasn't it tacos?
True in San Diego. Yeah.
Was it tacos or sushi?
I think it was tacos.
Maybe it's tacos. Damn it. It was tacos. You're right.
It's like that scene in The Deer Hunter with Christopher Walken. Yeah, he's playing. Dorothy may not know it, man, but she's literally just spinning the barrel. it's gonna get her one day.
Well, check out her music if you have it. All right.
Writing her down.
I'm gonna give you a different question though. Favorite cereal.
Oh, cereal.
There's probably going to be a follow-up question.
Strangely enough, and this is probably more to do with my dad, I eat oatmeal.
I was going to say the same thing, man. Plain oatmeal.
I eat oatmeal. Five days a week.
The follow-up question doesn't work with oatmeal on it.
Yeah, and we'll get back around.
What do you put in your oatmeal?
Just Quaker Oats, and it has less to do with the taste of it. It's a funny thing. I remember... my dad used to kind of like, you know, when I had no money, my dad would always say, like, here are some things that you could eat if you have no money, that at least you eat them and you felt like you ate something. So you eat oatmeal.
You ever put the oatmeal on the white bread? You make toast and then you put oatmeal on the toast.
All right.
I'm telling you.
We're coming out with a cookbook next.
Yeah. You could make the toast, cut it into like triangles, and dip in the oatmeal. Like it's almost like chips and salsa, but it's oatmeal toast.
That probably makes more sense than sitting there spreading oatmeal on white bread. But that being said,
desperate times, desperate times.
Yeah, exactly.
And Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch is a good choice, but peanut butter Captain Crunch to me might be the greatest, like, unhealthy cereal of all time.
Either way, the roof of your mouth is going to be paying for it.
Just torn the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's a couple days to recover from that. You got like those little strands hanging down, or at least feels like it's just shredded.
That's when a nice soft crystal, you know, will. That's such a gross sentence.
My mouth is tore up. I got to have the all crystal diet until I recover.
Please don't.
You know, there's a recipe that's a White Castle or Crystal dip where you buy so many of them and you blend them together and then you pour them in a baking tray and you bake them with some stuff on top of it. And then it's supposed to be a dip. I've never done it. And I think it should be a crime to put those things in a food processor or a blender, to be honest with you.
Oh, you guys are calling the devil by his name.
There's not a lot of chewing that's required either way. You know why you got to blend it, man.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is going to get gross.
These are the things you don't get asked to talk about on other podcasts, guys. This is what separates us from everybody else.
I just
most people want to know about music.
There was a story that Brad Whitford, like, plays guitar with, of course, Aerosmith.
Yep.
And he was talking about how they were down in Florida. And this is like, I think, early days for them. And he was talking about how they played the same club. They were there for like a week. And so he was eating at Burger King every day for the week and was walking down the street in Florida, of course, you know, with his boots, you know, his pants tucked in his boots. And after a whole week of Burger King, he discovered why you shouldn't do that, and also why you shouldn't have your pants tucked in your
boots. Your pants in your boots
when that happens. So, you know, I don't know if he kept those boots as a reminder of why Burger King is what you need for a whole week.
So we're really passionate about our music, and I think we're very.
So Burger King has never sponsored Aerosmith's tour.
No. I think that's a dollar they won't take.
Oh my God. What was I going to ask you guys? I completely lost my thought because of that. And it's Florida, so it's hot and humid. It's like the worst possible conditions you could possibly be in.
I can only imagine, you know.
Oh, good Lord. But
it paints a picture.
Okay. All right. Okay. What is the worst movie you've ever seen at the movie theater?
Oh,
you guys both have to answer this.
Worst movie I've ever seen at a movie theater. There are bad movies that I love.
Yep.
I think there's only one movie I've ever straight up walked out of. And I mean, it was terrible. It was some Will Ferrell movie. It was awful. Yeah, I don't. the campaign. Is that a Zach Galifianakis?
Is that the one with Zach? Yeah.
And I don't hate on you if you enjoy that movie. It could have been great. Could have been I had a bad day.
But, I saw it on cable for free, so or you know, at least whatever the cost of cable.
They were playing Batman Across the Hall, so me and who I was with literally left about 30 minutes in and went and watched Batman. So
good choice. Andrew.
I don't, you know, well, it's been a while since I've actually been in a movie theater, but I would probably be the person who would not leave a movie theater because you're usually air conditioned. So I mean, I'd probably just look at my phone or something. I mean, there's probably some reason I would, you know.
I will say one thing that's fun about when we're rehearsing or we're writing stuff is we'll come over to Andrew's and you never know, there's going to be some like B horror movie going on in the background. So we're like playing music and writing songs and you look up and you will see everything.
Yes.
You just never know what you're going to see. Just blood, body parts.
Island of Dr. Moreau. Yes.
Yeah.
It has to have gratuitous violence and gratuitous nudity or else it doesn't count.
It's Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime says no to nothing.
No. And they have some great B-level like movies that are just like, where did this come from?
And we just kind of, you know, usually we let Ben, you know, because Ben's our bass player. Ben's on the other side of the room.
He's got the direct eye.
He's got the, you know, it's to my back. So we usually let Ben pick it and, you know, whatever Ben picks, we go with.
So yeah. I'm going to ask your question a little bit different than help me out. At work, we have a punishment where if you do something, this is fun, by the way, if you do something wrong or whatever, there's got a criteria to meet, but you have to watch a bad movie from our list. Then you have to do like basically a book report in front of the team about said bad movie. So if you were to add a bad movie to our bad movie list, what would you choose?
Something that's painful to watch. Bad, but not enjoyable.
Yeah.
If we're talking punishment.
That's a good one.
I'm going to say a 4 hours director cut of Titanic.
Oh, good Lord.
You've got to hear like, my heart will go on.
Somebody would call HR for times. That one, though. We have to do something that's HR friendly.
Okay. Well.
The time is terrible. Like we've had Troll 2. We've had the Apple. What else have we had?
Troll 2 is a success.
We happen to like troll movies.
That's a good Friday night, man.
Have you guys seen Troll 2?
I think we've probably seen every troll movie. And like anything that, you know, anything that comes on that has troll, the word troll in it,
You're in it. There's like Troll Hunter, which is like a Norwegian film that came out. That
was also great.
Yeah, that's actually a good movie. That's not,
but not Nilbog. Is it Nilbog, right?
Nilbog, you've seen it. The Town of Nilbog.
I'm telling you, man.
Which is goblin backward. They're not even called trolls in the movie. They're called goblins.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there's no trolls in Troll 2. They're all...
That's right.
Soupy goblins.
And they turn people into plants so they can eat them instead of just eating plants.
Okay.
Oh, my God. That guy, the kid with the glass. Man, that's a good movie. Well, it's not a good movie. It's a good time.
That's where the kid gets up on the table and pees all over the food so his family won't eat it, get turned into plants.
That's a good Friday night, man.
And there's a documentary on that called Best Worst Movie. If you've seen that movie, check out the documentary on it. It's amazing. And you guys are like, what kind of hell podcast? This is supposed to be blues and Southern rock, and we're talking about goblin movies.
I was actually kind of thinking of the, you know, the idea that work would be something that you'd go home and watch a movie as punishment for work. When it seems like it would be the other way around.
You go to work.
You go to work as punishment for watching a movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, we try to have a little bit fun at times, and you know, just the punishments are like, did you annoy somebody, miss a deadline? Like, you know, just something like that. It's kind of like a kangaroo court, like if you play baseball or something, same kind of premise. Okay.
Sounds like a cool place to work.
It depends on who you work with, and we're a pretty good group.
Cool. All right. Good attitude.
All right. We're going to ask you guys questions to determine whether or not you're psychopaths. We already had the Craigslist killer out here. My nose is running from my laughing. All right. These come from our friend, great blues guitarist, blues singer, performer, rock singer, Leilani Kilgore, in case you're wondering.
Okay.
All right. If you're making a bowl of cereal, hence the cereal question, do you put the cereal in the bowl and then the milk on top of it? Or do you pour the milk first and then put the cereal on top of it?
Is there a single person? I want to meet the one person in the entire world.
Who puts the milk in first.
Yeah. I cannot believe that there's a person that chooses to do that.
That's the guy who answers your Craigslist ad and actually kills you and puts them in the trunk of the car.
Or if you work on a dairy farm, you might, yeah.
Or maybe if you really love milk, you just want a little cereal to wash your milk. So you guys are both cereal first and then milk people.
Absolutely.
Yes, if I were going to eat cereal, yes.
All right, we're one for one. Now we got to go for two for two here. When putting on your shoes, you first put your sock on the same foot and then the shoe on, or do you put a sock on each foot and then the shoe on each foot?
I'm definitely both socks and then both shoes.
So I'm
definitely
the Leilani. This is from her list.
Yes.
All right. And I know it's funny because I think you had a post from her on your site, and I'm thinking how many times she's actually probably looked across the room watching people put their shoes on to figure out if they're coming back.
So, Andrew, are you agreeing with Brandon's answer?
Yeah, I mean, unless one sock happens to be across the room. I mean,
okay. In a typical day, your socks first. And then all right. All right.
Generally speaking,
you guys pass. You are not psychopaths in the eyes of Leilani Kilgore in this
all
right. podcast.
If that's all it takes, I have some exes that might disagree.
That's a weight off.
Maybe that's what you do first before you decide to date somebody. You ask them those questions, or you have them make a bowl of cereal, put the shoes on, and you can like, well, you know, you should put the milk in first. There's no way I'm dating her.
Hey, you guys want to maybe, you know, come upstairs.
We'll get back to my place for cereal.
And then we'll kind of see where that goes.
And then you play Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain.
And then I sit at home alone in my socks.
All good stuff.
Maybe, you know, if you ever have to get a replacement in the band, hopefully you never do, but maybe that's, forget trying out with an instrument. Here, guys, there's two things you need to do before you even play for us. Okay. All right. All right. What is the craziest thing you guys have ever seen being on tour? Not necessarily together, but playing live music somewhere. What is the craziest thing you've ever seen?
That's a...
Or a good story from the road. Either
or one. A good story if you had to tell somebody, like, man, this is what it's like.
See, there...
The filter is...
Yeah.
Listen, here's the only rule to this question, guys. If a crime has been committed, only use the words allegedly and don't use somebody's real name.
I referenced it earlier, the corn pone.
Yeah.
this biker bar that was owned by the guy that owned the strip club across the street. And so from the stage, we're playing, and it's apparently homeboy's birthday. And they bring in a phallic cake, put it in the back room, and then I guess him and a couple of the workers from across the street go into the back room just in sight from the stage. And you see a lot more skin than you were wanting to see from the stage while we're playing like Comfortably Numb or something, like a cover. And just unfortunately seeing way more than you want to see. I don't know. That was awful. That was traumatic. You know, like,
did you stop playing? Were you distracted, or did you just power through it like a true professional?
No, I think I was inspired to really hit those David Gilmour bends with,
yeah, all, just hold everything. Them. I was, yeah. a lot of vibrato with your hands. With your
oh, yeah, it just felt more real in that moment, you know.
Andrew,
I'm gonna plead the fifth.
If it gets worse than that, I don't know.
No stories you can rat out Suzanne on so we can chatter later and say, you know what, Andrew said about
no,
you?
I love Suzanne. Suzanne's my sister. I've never.
What a voice, man. That's so awesome that you played with her in that band. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yep. We did it for years. So there's a lot of fun. We had some good memories, had some good shows. We did, man. Played with Leon Russell, played with a bunch of people, man. That was a fun band.
Yes. Yeah. Good shit.
Yeah.
England knew what was going on. The UK knew what was going on.
Yeah. For some reason, I don't know. It's just, you know,
a lot of the bands, artists we talk to, man, they do much better in Europe than they do over here because the European audience just really digs American rock music.
You know, I think it's just one of those things kind of like, how to put it? It's, you know, kind of what's commonplace in one place is maybe a little bit more exotic in another place. So, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Makes sense. You're,
you know, you're somewhere and you think, man, that sounds like my uncle's band that plays, you know, two houses down.
My uncle's band that plays Comfortably Numb while there's a dick cake off of the side of the stage. Yeah,
but, you know, your uncle's band should probably, you know, go take it to London because they'd love it.
All right. I hear they like phallus shake cakes over London. That's a thing. It's a big, big over there. You know, they have spotted dick cake. So
spotted dick, yeah.
Yeah. The Stones were from.
I didn't have the angle to confirm whether or not that was what was going on.
Yeah.
Oh boy, this could go in bad direction. All right, last question for you guys on the nonsense stuff here. What is a band, artist, or song that we would be surprised and our listeners would be surprised to hear that you guys like?
Oh,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
And here's, we're gonna add a new layer to this. You cannot say disco or the Bee Gees. Everybody says that. You cannot say that.
Harry Nilsson. Love Harry Nilsson.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's love a good it, one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be surprised by that because that's a good artist, but yeah, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think he did like the whole soundtrack. What's that movie? Midnight Cowboy?
Yep. Yeah. I believe that's right.
It's brilliant. I mean, There was an animated thing that he also did the music to. I can't remember the name of it, but you know, just for some reason, you know, that popped into my head. You know, Serge Gainsbourg is another person that the interesting thing about this band is, you know, we listen to a lot of stuff. There's a lot of, you know, though in terms of what we're trying to do, you know, again, is, you know, inspired by what we always say, the best of 70s rock, gospel, soul, and blues. But, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that, you know, good music is good music.
You know? Good music is, yep, absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to look up what that movie would have been. Oh, he did this. He was on the Popeye soundtrack. That Robin, remember that 1980?
Yeah,
Robin
yeah. Williams. That's another. With, yeah, the Popeye with movie. Shelley Duvall. That's
Shelley Duvall's. Yeah, it was Olive Oil. That was that was a musical. I actually liked that when I was a kid.
Yeah. So I mean, it's you know, it's he was a. I mean, he's a really interesting guy. You know, at stage fright would never play live, but you know, did a lot of brilliant stuff. You know, he would do like TV specials. He would do, you know, things that, you know, kind of a more controlled environment, you know, hung out with John Lennon a lot, you know.
So. Very eclectic. I was looking up on Wikipedia there. That's what I was looking through. And yeah, very eclectic career.
Yeah. But, you know, he's got a lot of really good sound, you know, songs that kind of, how to put it? I mean, you know, one of the things I love, you know, especially if you are a musician and you can play like two or three notes of what you do and people can recognize what you do. It's like, you know,
I'm wearing a Bo Diddley t-shirt,
you know, Bo Diddley's one, Miles Davis is another, you know, when you can, you know, two or three notes in, I know who that is. I mean, that's kind of genius. And, you know, Nielsen's got a thing he does that nobody else does.
Love it. That's a great answer. Yeah. Brandon?
I'd say I've listened to quite a bit of Aaliyah recently.
Really? That is completely random. No, seriously. I mean, she had some stuff in the 90s, right? When God rest her soul. But yeah, she had some stuff. Good hits.
Dude, every song. I'm saying, man, there was a period where literally the perfectly written songs, perfectly edited, perfectly like minimal, and just hooks and just the way it's crafted and the way that it's I've been sitting with that for a minute. I've been
all right.
Yeah.
MTV.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. Brian. Yeah. Brian, that's a great answer. Like that's not one we've heard before and a complete unexpected one. That's a good one. And to bring this all around back to Aaliyah a little bit, we had on about a month or so ago Jason Charles Miller, who does like hard Southern rock. In fact, he wrote Old Scarecrow with Charlie Starr.
Oh, cool.
And stuff, yeah. But he used to be in an industrial metal band called Godhead. And where I'm going with this is Godhead was on the Queen of the Damned soundtrack, which
yeah. Aaliyah. See, there you go.
Six degrees of Aaliyah. Six Degree of Brandon Neal. I don't know. One or the other, whichever one we want to do it.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
That was pretty good. All right, guys, it's been a lot of fun. What's going on next with you guys? Where does everybody go to find out more about your music, tour dates, get your merch, find out everything about? And correct me, like I've looked you guys up multiple times. Is it Rare Birds ATL? Is it just Rare Birds, the Rare Birds? Like it's a million different ways on the internet and on your you know, yes, your streaming and devices.
It's confusing, but we call ourselves the Rare Birds, or Rare Birds,
and there's the Rare Birds. There's one of those
to the world and at large. We are Rare Birds ATL because that's the easier way to find us. In fact, I don't know,
and that's the name of your album ATL.
There used to be a band that was from London, and they were called Share UK.
Yeah, Share UK, Share UK.
Yeah, so.
Just Share with a British accent.
Yes, yeah, but you know, so that's the easier way to find us, and it also ties into your question. I mean, we're Rare Birds ATL on Instagram. We're Rare Birds ATL on Facebook. We're Rare Birds ATL on Bandcamp, which is where you can find all of our records to date. Are on Bandcamp.
And it's probably better to buy from Bandcamp too, because you guys get a bigger cut of the money that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, but at this point, man, again, and this is why we really appreciate you guys having us on. We're just trying to spread the word, and we don't, you know, however you get to us, we are happy to have you. So just anybody out there, you know, just please check us out. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, your record is awesome. It was a breath of fresh air when it came in. Brian was raving about it. He got hooked up with your PR or manager who sent me a record. I've checked it out. I contribute to like a quarterly top 10 list for like different stuff. And like, you guys made it on my Q3 top 10 by far and away. And I love the record. So.
All right. Cool. Man, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that, man. All right. Wow.
So, Brian.
Thank you so much to Andrew Kyler and Brandon Neal from Rare Birds. You guys have a great record, ATL. It's awesome. Incredible. You guys fit in there so well with a lot of the stuff we're listening to, and it's so cool that you're continuing on that Georgia tradition and doing such a great job of it. So thank you for being on, man. It means a lot to us. And anytime you guys want to come back on, man, we'll promote the hell out of you guys, and we love your band, man. Thanks for coming on.
And thank you. And thank you for you guys doing what you do. And the cool thing about it, like, we're just sitting here, man, and I've been writing down like names that you guys have been sharing with us, and we're going to go check it out. So that's kind of the cool thing. It's just, you know, always something new, man.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Thank you guys.
All right. You guys have a great night. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Andrew Kyler, Brandon Neal from Rare Birds out of Atlanta. I'm picturing Steve Gorman on a mod scooter with a flashlight.
Bro, with a flashlight. With a headlight. Oh, man. We got some good stories. We got some breaking trivia about Black Crowes that we were able to share with our friends Ian and David at State of Morka. Brian, what was that breaking trivia that we never heard before?
The breaking trivia. What was the breaking trivia?
Are you talking about Andrew was asked to try out for the Black Rose?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I was going to say. But with Mr. Gorman told us, or told you. Yeah. Yeah. Spectacular.
Yeah, right. Anyways. So, wait, was that on the podcast? Or was that what
Steve was Gorman.
I got confused. Okay, for everybody, if you're wondering what the hell is going on. When I chatted Steve, he also said they asked Andrew to try out for the Black Crowes. And so as a good journalist, I went to make sure I could verify the story, Brian. And I went to Mr. Kyler himself and I said, hey, I hear from Steve that, you know, you were asked to try out, and he confirmed it. But he also said that he didn't feel like he did a great job with it either and just was too nervous. But he did confirm he tried out when Oddly ended up making that position player.
The gig that Oddly got and the gig from the Spin Doctors we talked to. Anthony.
Oh, yes.
Anthony Kreisen.
Yes. There you go. God, I'm glad you could remember. So this is funny. We're gonna give you guys a little insight into how the sausage is made. Sometimes, Brian, I hope you don't mind, like, we're divulging secrets here.
Sure.
Sometimes Brian and I will do intros and outros the same time that we talk to our guests. Sometimes, Brian, we do them
later.
Well, after we talked. And this is one of the occasions where where I got confused with the conversation with Steve and Andrew. I thought we actually had on the podcast. So
winging it and trying to remember the facts.
Should have wrote notes. But the cool thing of the fact that we did do this afterwards is we got that story from Gorman, confirmed it with Andrew. Now everybody knows that he tried out for the Black Rose.
You just gave me some confidence too, because when you referred to yourself as a journalist, are we music journalists as well as podcasters?
I mean, not like regular ones, but yeah. We are, because sometimes we are sharing stories and, you know, news.
We are no Matt Wake, but we're podcast journalists. We're no Matt Wake or Andrew Daly. We just created a new category. Proctologist.
But I do know that you should confirm with at least two sources of
podcast journalists.
Yes. My friend Diego, who's an attorney, but has a journalism degree, and I always critique journalists, and he always defends them, tells me that you always have to confirm with two independent sources for a story. And I did. And that, there you go.
All right. Well, before we get delirious, you know, by the way, we got some big dogs coming up that we're going to talk to, and you guys will love that too. So anyway, maybe I'm already delirious. Well, if I am, then always remember, Southern rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
Tell me, where do you- Would that you've been known to wonder lately? I see you haven't been singing quite the same. Little bird, what's happened to your wing? You gotta find you a feather love.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.